Welcome to A Taste Of, a programme brought to you by the International School of Languages. Today we're going to look at Italian. Italy is quite close to Malta, and a lot of the cultures, possibly, are similar, aren't they? Today we have Sandro here talking with us. Sandro, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the invitation. And I'm looking forward to this opportunity to speak about Italian, maybe from a different point of view to the way I'm used to speaking about it here at university.
Okay. How different do you think it is to the reality?
Well, how different? I mean, if you take Italian from an academic point of view, it is pretty different to the way, so to say, the language itself is presented and the way it is actually, the dynamics of the language in real life situations and in real life contexts. I mean, one of the main, for example, I think aspects which is extremely important as far as Italian is concerned is even the very fact that it's such an expressive language that Italians themselves, very often use the language in such a dynamic manner. It's very often associated even to its musicality. Italian in itself, is used to, we're used to associating Italian even to Italian music, to Italian way of life. But anyway, maybe we can delve into this a little bit
yes,
further on.
Yes, we will. And we're going to listen to an Italian track, which you brought along with us today, Sandro. Italian music. It is strange how Italian music never really made it on a global scale, isn't it? Like we have the English music. I'm sorry, Sandro, for the awkward question.
No, it's not an awkward question, in actual fact. It is a question which has, of course, many facets to it, I would say. Well, yes, okay, let us take Italian music. Let's take what you have just said, Italian music not making it at on the global scale. Of course, there's the language problem and the language barrier. I mean, nowadays, especially what is normally associated with popular culture, with pop music, tends to be very heavily influenced by English and by the English language. But let us keep in mind that that music is not only pop music, and of course Italian music and the culture of Italian musical instruments and operas and operettes.
I know when you think of the lyrics.
Is extremely widespread. I mean, in actual fact, surprisingly enough, even from a language point of view, you actually get people who study Italian specifically, maybe not here in Malta, but abroad it's a pretty widespread phenomenon, where people actually learn Italian because they are interested in opera or in operette or in, classical music, which is very, very heavily influenced by, what went on historically in Italy. Then, of course, in terms of pop music, well, all right, it doesn't obviously get or break through what is normally the mainstream American or English market, but keep in mind that there's also, for example, the South American market, where some Italian singers actually do make it and make it pretty big time, so to say. And then, of course, well, you've got some other classic tracks. I mean, Volare of Modugno, which I think has been translated in so many languages and sung in so many ways. So, I wouldn't say it doesn't break through. But, of course, I'm biased, of course, even on this point.
Yes, you know what fascinates me about Italy, and we'll get into this a bit later on, is the various differences that exist within one boot.
Yes.
You can move for half an hour from one part of Italy to another and you've got a total different culture, so to speak.
No, absolutely. I mean, in actual fact, I mean, this is obviously also because of the history of the country. I mean, Italy has actually, gained unification in 1861, so it is relatively young as a nation, when you compare it to other European countries like England or Spain or Germany, in these terms at least. So of course, yes, I mean, very often Italians themselves speak about a phenomenon which they call campanilismo. The campanile is the church tower. So you feel more, so to say, you feel closer to your roots in terms of the village you may come from or the region you may come from than maybe the actual national feeling of feeling Italian, if I may put it in these terms. And this is why even within the country itself, in quite a similar fashion to what exists in Malta, there is also a very strong degree of rivalry, between villages, between even regions sometimes to a certain extent.
We see this through football.
Well, of course, you see this obviously maybe through sport, but it also is present on many other fronts. I mean, even in terms of, for example, Italian cooking or Italian cuisine,
one of the reasons. Toscana,
yes, of course. And you'd get very specific characteristics. Huh? And I mean, if you were speaking to somebody, for example, from Tuscany, I mean, no way he will ever accept that, any other Italian cuisine or any other, so to say, dish which may be related to another region is superior to his own. There are very close roots, which are very often, however, very, very close to the town or village or area, let us
so
say, that a person has.
It's national pride we are talking about. This is a pride of your village.
It's a pride, well, not specifically or necessarily of the village. It could also be of the, you know, of the province, of the region.
Okay.
But, for example, let's take, you know, you've mentioned Tuscany. I mean, Florentines, you know, they are very proud to be Florentines. They are probably they would consider themselves to be Fiorentini first, before Italiani, you know. And this is, I think, one of the results, let us say, of a very complex historical past, a very complex history, which has seen the country, in actual fact, first of all, ruled over and above by so many different rulers, and very often fragmented into little bits. So, you know, it tends to create a certain amount of rivalry.
If you
which
give us an overview
pride.
Of this history, just a quick overview, because I know you can't go on for hours.
No, I can't go. Going on for hours, maybe not. But I mean, I can give a quick overview. Well, obviously, I mean, one must keep in mind the fact that, for example, Italy, I mean, before the late 1800s, was divided into many different areas, which were under different rules. So, you know, you would get, for example, the Savoia, who were in Piedmont, which is the region of Italy which is close to France. The Austrians were in the area where today there is Milan, and the Habsburgs basically were in the area where there is Lombardy today, where there is Milan, which is the north central area. Obviously, then in the center, the Papal States, that is the Pope, and the Catholic Church was far more influential, in fact, at least from a political point of view, than it was today. And in the south, you know, there was the so-called Regno delle Due Sicilie, which was governed basically by the Borboni. So again, there was another fragmentation, if you like, but these are just the main ones, because in actual fact, there were many others. For example, even Tuscany in itself was a sort of Grand Ducato. It was like, a city-state in its own right.
So when you say a city-state, are you talking about a sort of a political structure that is totally different to the rest of Italy? Like
yes.
You said, like for example, I remember a question, one of these general knowledge questions, which is the smallest city, and it's the Vatican.
Yes, well, I mean, the Vatican, of course, has a little bit of a particular status, if you like, which is obviously due, even in this case, to historical developments, I would say. In terms, yes, of course, in the past, besides the Vatican, there's also, for example, San Marino, which as well, in its own right, still conserves a strong degree of at least political independence, though obviously it is very strong.
Is it still a tax haven? Is it a tax haven still, San Marino?
Well, San Marino is, well, I mean, when we speak about tax havens, I think we normally refer to Monaco and Monte Carlo and these sort of places. I wouldn't consider San Marino as being a tax haven, which is on the same level, on par, for example, as other renowned areas. Even because, of course, I mean, it does depend pretty heavily even on Italy and on the surrounding areas, too. But, I mean, even to come back to the very idea of a city-state, yes, of course, there was a large degree of autonomy within many areas of Italy.
So do you think that affected the psychology of the people?
Well, of course, it's difficult to actually just boil it down to the psychology of the people. What I can, let us say, state pretty simple terms is that it does create a form of identity. It did create definitely a form of identity in the past, which I think is still very much present today, you know, in the terms which I explained before, as feeling very close ultimately to maybe one's regional identity rather than to one's national identity. Psychology, of course, is a complex term in itself, but, well, if we had to refer to the history, of course, reflecting even the identity of the Italian people, definitely. And I mean, you see this in so many different ways, you know. I mean, even politically, if it comes to that, there are clear indications. For example, Italy, in certain regions, are clearly associated with left-wing, for example, parties. Others are associated with right-wing parties, some which have had a very strong influence, for example, in the past, even because of the presence, for example, of the Catholic Church, not only Rome, for example, the northeastern area of Italy, the Veneto area, which in the past was quite heavily also influenced by the presence of laborers, farmers, peasants, etc.
What I know about Veneto is that it was where Romeo and Juliet was written.
Oh yes, of course, Romeo and Juliet is associated with Verona, but of course, Veneto is probably, well, I mean, of course, to me, Italy is all beautiful. It's very, very difficult for me, honestly, to... In fact, it's when I go abroad, even on holiday, my first temptation is always to go to Italy, even though I go there for work. But for some reason, I'm always attracted very much by all the regions in Italy, not only by the most obvious ones. Veneto, however, definitely, I mean, in its own right, is one of the more beautiful ones, first of all, of course, because of Venice. But then there's also Verona, but then there are also other areas. For example, Padova is, again, extremely renowned because of, there's the Cappella degli Scrovegni, for example, which has some frescoes of Giotto. That is the beauty of Italy, which, you know, in each and every corner, I mean, even sometimes in the tiniest villages, there is a cultural heritage, there is something worth visiting, there is a huge, so to say, richness in terms of culture. But I believe, I'm biased on this, but I believe that sometimes even this cultural richness of the country also reflects a little bit the attitude of the people. I don't mean to speak about stereotypes or in these terms, but very often people tend to be pretty warm and pretty friendly, and they like showing off the beauty of their country.
Yes, and what better way to hear beauty than music, huh, Sandro?
Yes, okay.
So what we have a piece of music, Sandro, today that you got for us. What did you get for us?
Yes, this was probably the most difficult question that you asked me before, you know, I actually came to this interview. I mean, when you asked me, sort of, can you bring along a piece of music that represents Italian culture? But so in my case, I mean, I preferred getting a song by Fabrizio De André. Why? Because Fabrizio De André is, first of all, is one of the so-called cantautori, so he's, you know, a songwriter-singer, if you like. So he obviously writes his own lyrics and sings his own songs. He's from Genova, which is a port area of Italy, and he's extremely highly, obviously, renowned, and he died, actually, about 10 years ago. He died, he was pretty young when he died, but he's still extremely, extremely famous, extremely well-known, even, for example, just last week there was the Sanremo Festival, and there was a whole tribute to him. And the reason why I chose this particular song, which is called Don Raffaele, is because even though Fabrizio De André is from Genova, he actually sings the song in the Neapolitan regional variety. Okay. It's a regional variety, it's not a dialect, so it's pretty easy to understand. But, you know, he it's a little bit of a mix. I don't know if you'd like me to talk a little bit about the song, but you would like to listen to it. Yes,
and then we have an explanation, and also maybe about the emotions it evokes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Sandro.
Io mi chiamo Pasquale Gaffiero e son brigadiero del carcere Oinè. Io mi chiamo Gaffiero Pasquale e sto appoggio reale dal 53. E al centesimo catenaccio, alla sera mi sento una straccia. Per fortuna tal braccio speciale c'è un uomo geniale che parla con me. Tutto il giorno con quattro infamoni, briganti papponi cornuti alla che. Tutte l'ore con sta fedenzia che sputa minacce sa figlio con me. Ma alla fine mi sento papà, mi sbottone e mi leggo il giornale. Mi consiglio con Don Raffaele, mi spiega che penso e bevi un buon caffè. Ah, che bello caffè, pure in carcere osanna fa, qua ricetta caccia e cirinella, compagno di cella ci ha dato mamma. Prima pagina, 20 notizie, 21 ingiustizie, lo Stato che fa, si costerna, si indigna, si impegna, poi getta la spugna con gran dignità. Mi cervello e mi asciugo la fronte, per fortuna c'è chi mi risponde, a quell'uomo certissimo immenso io chiedo consenso a Don Raffaele, un galantuomo che tiene sei figli, ha chiesto una casa e ci danno consigli, mentre assessore che Dio lo perdoni, entrando nel rullozzo ci alleva i bisogni. Poi vi basta una mossa, una voce, Castu Cristo ci leva una croce, con rispetto se fatto le tre, vuoi da spremuto o vuoi tu caffè. Ah, che bello caffè, pure in carcere usanne fa, caricetta cacci cirinella, compagno di cella ci ha dato mamma. Ah, che bello caffè, pure in carcere usanne fa, qua ricetta di cicirinella, compagno di cella precisa mamma. ci sta l'inflazione, la svalutazione, la borsa c'è là che c'è là. Io non tengo compagni che chi li stipendi e un ambo se sogno a papà. Aggiungete mia figlia innocenza, buon marito non tiene pazienza. Non vi chiedo la grazia per me, vi faccio la barba o la fate da sé. Voi tenete un cappotto cammello che al mazzi processerà vado più bello. Un vestito gessato marrone, così ci è sembrato alla televisione. Queste nozze vi prego eccellenza, mi prestasse per fare presenza. Io già tengo le scarpe a gilet, gradito campano, ho voluto caffè. Ah, che bello che a te, pure in carcere usanna fa, la ricetta che a Ciccirinella compagna di cella ci ha dato mamma. Ah, che bello che a te, pure in carcere usanna fa, la ricetta di Ciccirinella compagna di cella precisa mamma.
Okay, so I heard Galantuomo and I heard Caffè, Sandro there.
Well, this is actually a song with a social, even though it sounds so merry and joyous, especially this last piece that you might have heard. It's actually the story about, a prison warden, believe it or not. It's a prison warden who spends all day, of course, with prisoners. The thing is that in the prison in which he works, there is a boss. A boss of the Camorra. Camorra is the sort of
the Italian police.
Napolitan, no. The Camorra is the Napolitan mafia, is the organized crime that there is in the area around Naples. No, so it's like you have basically a mafia boss there.
Okay.
Who's in prison? And this prison warden, basically, at the end of his rounds, tired out after a day of work of being maybe insulted and in prison, etc., or have a day of hard labor, ends his rounds by going actually to the cell where there is this prison warden. The thing is that, the prison warden is where there is this prisoner, where there is this mafia boss. And what happens is that this prison warden sits together with the mafia boss. They, of course, have a cup of coffee, which is very typical. That is why, of course,
I think everything is very typical here.
It's one of the things, which is more typical. That's why, in fact, there's the refrain which says, "Ah, che bello caffè, pure in carcere lo sanno fa." That is how good coffee is. Even they do it well even here in prison, because in Italy it's practically impossible. It's unacceptable to have a bad cup of coffee. So well, coffee is good even here in prison. And basically what happens is that this prison warden asks for some little favors, from this mafia boss, and tells him, can you help me out on this little thing? And this, of course, prison warden is only too happy to help out as long as he gets his little favor in prison. So it's a little bit of a social, social meaning, of course, because Leandre sings this song, but obviously there's also an ironic connotation to all this, but at the same time, it's very, very Mediterranean, if I may say so. I mean, in the fact that, you have an authority and you have your prisoner, but, there's something which puts them both together. There's something
it's
which ultimately...
It's humankind, isn't it? It's mankind. So,
in a way, yes, of course. Let me repeat. I mean, De André is very social in his themes, in the themes that he actually deals with in his music. And there's a great degree even of irony. And you must also be careful sometimes when listening to DeAndre, because despite the typical maybe lightness that one may listen to through even the rhythm, certain rhymes, even certain play on words, etc., one must very often even go beneath and try and actually understand what he's actually pointing at, because he's obviously even singing in a way that, despite, let me repeat, integrating certain aspects which are typically Italian, are clearly pointing a finger at a situation which exists.
I think you put your finger on it for me. Anyway, the sense that something that looks very simple in Italy often has a lot of meaning underneath. Like, for example, we think about simple dishes. We think about spaghetti, which is a simple dish with tomatoes, yet they do put a lot of, care in their food preparation. And everything seems to be done with a lot of intensity.
Well, yes, in that way, definitely. I mean, if it comes to gastronomy, and Italian typical food, of course, there's almost a passion to it. There's a love of cooking in a simple way, very often with very simple ingredients, which are also normally very healthy. But then, the result is also very, very good, extremely delicious. I mean, I think this is pretty typical today, you know, it's pretty representative sometimes on television. I mean, my little daughter, who's only 8 years old, whenever, you know, I zap around on television and I happen to stop on an Italian channel, her normal comment is, but why do these Italians always cook? Because apparently the amount of cooking programs, you know, that are actually screened regularly on television, is pretty amazing in that sense. But definitely, very often, beyond maybe a certain simplicity, especially, let me repeat, even in terms of, well, okay, even in terms of music, maybe in terms of even, well, food, in terms even of sometimes the way people represent themselves, there is definitely a certain amount of complexity and depth and passion, I would say.
Because it's not what comes across with the typical stereotype, is it, of the Italian? It seems to be this typical stereotype is, don't worry, I'm relaxed, life is good, la bella vita type of thing.
Of course, stereotypes are always very dangerous. I mean, that is the truth. The bottom line is, of course, they always do contain a certain amount of truth, but of course, they're also misleading in their own right. I think the amount of stereotypes that are related to Italians, to Italian way of life, and to Italy in general, are, well, so numerous that it's very, very difficult to actually separate those which actually do have a certain amount of truth from those which are maybe, well, based on prejudice in certain ways. And let's also keep in mind as well that, as we said earlier in this interview, you know, that Italy is pretty complex. So, you know, Italians create stereotypes about other Italians. The Italians who live in the north, of course, create stereotypes about the Italians who live in the south. You know, they might call them, they might define them in a certain way. But of course, likewise, the Italians who live in the south will create stereotypes about the Italians who live in the north. So it's not only the stereotypes that actually emerge, and which sometimes can be seen from the outside, or which are seen in cultures which are not in Italy. Because in Italy itself, of course, there are many different stereotypes about Italians themselves.
Okay, so not only do we have stereotypes as Europeans look at Italy, but in Italy itself,
we have
stereotypes of each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is a reality which is again very much linked to the culture, and to the way even people perceive each other. I wouldn't want to sort of give examples of stereotypes, especially the different types of stereotypes that exist, especially between the north and the south, because some of them can be pretty heavy and sometimes even unkind. But the truth is that sometimes, even though a person, for example, who might work a company might actually prefer employing a foreigner, maybe, well, a German, let us say, or a person from Britain or wherever, rather than employing maybe somebody who might come from the south, if he's in the north, there is a huge amount also of rivalry in this sense, which again is related very much, yes, to the history, and is also related undoubtedly to the economic situation. I mean, let's keep in mind again that the north of Italy economically can compare itself to, you know, the richer European nations, whereas the southern part of Italy,
due to the history and to the,
yes,
and to the, all the other,
not even of course, this all stems ultimately even from the, you know, geographical situation. I mean, in the north, for example, they've got a vast plain which is called the Pianura Padana, which is basically split in half by the River Po. There are the Alps, so, you know, you've got water in great quantities, you've got lots of agricultural products. It's the very heart from where even, for example, Italian pasta actually originates. That's why Italian pasta is normally associated with Bologna and Emilia-Romagna. In the south, of course, I mean, they have less resources. Less resources lead to less.
One of the things that I'm going to ask you, Sandro, is to teach me today is, let's say I had to go to Italy the first time and I can't speak Italian. What would be some good common phrases that I would get around with?
Well, first of all, I think you'd have to say ciao.
Oh, that's easy one, ciao. But is it like a Maltese means hello, goodbye?
Well, of course, in Italian, when you say ciao, it does have a slightly different meaning to the meaning that we use in Maltese.
Simple?
No, because languages, of course, are not necessarily simple. I mean, of course, you can say ciao both to greet a person as well as to say goodbye to a person in both ways. So ciao Marco does not only mean goodbye Marco, but it can also mean hello Marco, if it comes to that. But of course, then you need certain basic terms, but like grazie, prego, so you would say...
You say prego a lot.
Yes, you would say prego. This is one of the aspects where, you know, sometimes culture entwines with language use. I mean, very often in English, you know, if somebody says you thank you, you don't necessarily have to say something like don't mention it, which sounds pretty artificial. In Italy, grazie is necessarily I would say, in most contexts, also followed by prego. So it would be grazie, prego. Come stai? So how are you? Sto bene, grazie. You know, so how are you? I'm fine. Thank you.
Sto bene, grazie.
Exactly. So, yes, these are at least two or three, very basic phrases that one would use regularly, in whichever situation.
And if I go to a restaurant and I'm trying to order food, is it the menu written in English and Italian? Or?
Well, yes, in most cases now, you might not get the menu maybe written in English and Italian, but believe me, if you come to order food in Italy, people will be helpful enough to be able to tell you exactly what you should be eating.
Okay.
Of course, Italian is also... if we had to be a little bit more careful in Italian, you'd get, the forma di cortesia, which is the forma del lei. So strictly speaking, if you're at a restaurant and you are speaking even to a waiter, you would not just use the you form, but you would also use the so-called lei form. So there are certain aspects, even in the way one uses his language, which are, again, pretty culturally entwined.
Is it an easy language to learn?
I never really speak about languages in terms of easy and difficult, because actually all languages, I'm a linguist, so at the end of the day, all languages to me are interesting rather than
beautiful. I totally agree.
so to me, let me put it maybe in a different way. Is Italian easy to learn maybe for somebody who knows Maltese and English here in Malta? There are certainly a certain amount of advantages. The very fact that so many words in Maltese come from Italian is a bridge, which can help a person understand the language better and maybe start learning it too. The fact, of course, that we are culturally, geographically so close is also another aspect which can lead to language.
I know, half an hour and we're there.
Of course. If you ask whether Italian is easy for a person who might only know Chinese, I think that's a different,
It's a different script.
Yes. It's a different script. It's a language which comes from a totally different family, so it's, of course, pretty...
Definitely. I think of Italian as being a historical language coming from Latin and...
Yes, like all languages, of course, it's not only Italian, but even Italian has its own history. It has developed, of course, from Latin. But it is very much part of one large family of languages, which also includes Spanish and French and Portuguese.
Fantastic.
So yes, it's... I believe, maybe we can finish off with this, that language really reflects also the culture. The language reflects the culture that people
grazie.
Use it.
Grazie, Sandro. Sandro. Thank you very much, Sandro, for coming to join us today. That is Michelle from the International School of Languages.